Let's start off with what's going on, what have we been doing this weekend, and let's look at the intention, of course, is to land everything. But also to try and take into account all the different questions that have been raised. Just listen for a moment. So in a certain sense, this whole question really of complexity and simplicity and the recurring question of Job, why does Trump exist, why do bad things exist, how can we be with that without becoming them? How can we manage, also even how can we manage lots of new input? And why are we looking at the Kabbalah and the Welsh tradition simultaneously? So kind of come into that as well. Either one would be complex enough. So what are we doing here? Is what comes out of that? Well, what we're doing is simultaneously looking at our own development, our own nature. We're also looking at the way in which collective experience unfolds, and looking at the Mabinogi, for example, and the tree, not as to become experts in these forms, but to have an understanding both of the deeper parts of ourselves and the deeper parts of the world. Now, right at the heart of that idea is the sense of the question, who I am, and who have I, but more particularly, who have I learned to be, and how have we all collectively learned to be? Now what we learn, in a certain sense, what we learn really is to become small. And then what we learn is to defend the smallness. It's a natural reflex, right? It's almost the reflex to curl up, to turn away from that which disturbs. Particular quality of being a human being is to be the living bridge between opposites. This phrase that we get from the third branch of the Mabinogi, which is bidben bidbont, to be a bridge, to be a center of life, is to be a bridge. Is to there and the. The centrality of the body in that, the act of embodiment, is fundamental. The mind can hold only one thing at any one time, which is why if there is conflict going on in our psyche, our energies swing. We become convinced. Now if you notice when you're in conflict or something, when you're in deep ambivalence, what happens is your energies swing in one direction. And at the extreme end of that swing, you become convinced of the rightness of that position. You literally embody that. And you think, brilliant, I've got it. Now, if the conflict is not resolved, what you then start to notice is almost immediately after you've got it, you start to feel doubt creeping in. And before you know it, you're then in the other pole, and you're equally convinced of the rightness of the other pole. Until such time as that movement between the opposites is resolved, either by something happening or a third thing emerging that somehow brings a sense of balance and peace to the opposites. Adam Kadmon in the Kabbalah is the universal human being, is the archetype of the true human being. It, of course, has a relationship with the second creation story of Genesis, which is the story of the Garden of Eden. And it is a creative riff of the Kabbalists make of that story. Because the story, as we're given it in the book of Genesis, is a story of opposition. It's a story of the woman being blamed, the serpent being blamed. It is a story of dualism, really. It's the story of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. The Kabbalists say that Adam Kadmon, the universal human being, is the person who can eat of the tree of life, and who is the being that combines opposites. Therefore, Adam Kadmon, rather than being the separated being, has united the polarities. So to be Adam, truly Adam, Adam means born of the earth. Kadmon means the universal. So it's being born of the earth, you enter into the universal experience of being able to bring the opposites together. So the person who brings the opposites together is the person who unites the letters of the name, who unites the four worlds, and who brings about a precise mirroring between the inner and outer worlds. And in that process is not hiding in smallness, has that capacity then to embrace disturbance, not in a sense of personality. Because the first thing, if you're going to encounter somebody like Trump or any of those other guys that are around, is the first thing that you have to embrace is your reaction. The first bit of weaving of the veil is not anything about that. It's about you embrace your rage, you embrace your fear, your fury, your outrage, your disbelief, and you must bring that back into the great bundle of the living. And as you're able to do that, as you're able to have some kindness and compassion and clarity for yourself, that sense of outrage gets connected with the deeper energies of the tree. The rage becomes the clarity of Gevurah. Right, this whole sense of the tree, the choice is always really, in terms of the Kabbalah, is you can either be in the tree of life or you're in the tree of death, which is the clipotic reflection. Now the great thing about that is that swinging back and forth means that whatever state you're in, however extreme, there is a connection to the tree of life. So even if you're very depressed, you can come into the place of joy. If you're very angry, you can come into the place of peace. But you do that not by trying to struggle in the smaller places of your psyche, but by inviting in the air through prayer, through contemplation, inviting in the angels, inviting in the qualities of the deeper soul that then holds us in that place. Adam Kadmon, you find very, you know, described really in the book of the book of the Zohar. Which is one of the 15th century Kabbalistic works, which describes very elaborate descriptions of this double-sided being. But the reality of it is Adam Kadmon is the living tree. So when we identify ourselves with the tree, we are by becoming, we of course remain ourselves, but we, as that living tree, are then the living Adam. We are the universal human being. This is this fractal kind of process. And in that place, this is where the Colette's bone teachings are, with the appearance, the way we therefore show up at that point is united with the essence, which is united with the breath that creates that, and is then in an alchemical cycle of appearing, returning to the source, touching then, as we appear, gathering, touching whatever we are touched by, returning to the source with that. And so there is this this fountain of wisdom, this alchemical distillation, and constant flow state, then is the thing that sustains us. And so but in order to do that, we must be as clear as we can, be as connected as we can to these deeper energies, else we get trapped and enchanted. Now, the story of the fourth branch of the Mabinogi, which I will come back to in detail next time we meet, is a story that takes a complete jump from the previous part of the Mabinogi. We find ourselves in Powys in North Wales, and we find ourselves in a story that's about enchantment and the way in which both the enchanted and the enchanter entrap themselves. And right at the end, the end of the fourth branch has a story, really, where the opposites come together, in which the magician figure Gwydion is both mother and father, and abandoned, like Prospero in the Tempest, abandons his rough magic and opens himself to the magic of the heart and to the place of longing and prayer. Now, in there are many transformations in the Mabinogion that are about the transformation of appearance, which is called firm or form. But the only time we find the deeper transformation of the Mabinogion is in the fourth branch, where the word Anyan is used. And Anyan is the transformation of essence. So in a certain sense, what we're looking at this weekend, really, is the way in which the sense of will and love manifesting can either be a true mirror of essence or becomes distorted. Now, coming back to this question of complexity and simplicity, might say, why can't we just do just simple exercises like Colette's meditation? Why don't we just do Colette's meditations or other such simple versions and just do those over and over again? Well, there's a good reason for that, because if that was the case, we would become immune to them very quickly. What I've found effective over the years, both for myself and in teaching others, is that we move between different modes of expression. Now, yes, that involves a degree of confusion, of course. And at times, wishing I'd shut up, or, oh God, not more. Inevitably that's going to be the case. Inevitably, at some times, you're going to feel congested. But the reason for doing that, and it's that it isn't just my method, it's how I was taught, it's how the Kabbalah does teach in the world, is that you keep moving between different kinds of practices, because it's a sort of creative art. The art of transformation is a creative art. So if we just did something simple, there are plenty of simple practices. One thing I could just say, right, sit by a wall. Like Zen, you could be Zen, let's be Zen. We'll just sit in front of a wall for 2 days, 3 days, 4 days, many days as it takes, days. And, you know, there are, sadly, if you're a Zen practitioner, you might do something like that. Except the thing that's always missed in that is that Zen practitioners are doing this in very, anyone who's never done a Zen type retreat, and Rob I know has done many, will know there's a whole set of other things at work when you do that. You're in a restricted environment, you're in a group of people that you know, there's all kinds of other things at play. You're given a koan to work with. There's a whole set of kind of other things that have to support the process. Because transformation involves a bringing something to the boil and letting something go. So if you're confused sometimes, well, good. As long, of course, the confusion doesn't spin you out too much. So hopefully if you feel that, you tell me and I try to make it clearer. But I don't apologize for confusing you, because that literally is part of the method.
Could you clarify one thing? Just go back a second. You said if you feel sort of righteous outrage or something like that, that is already beginning to split off.
Well, no, it's the very first thing that you meet, right, is your own reaction to that situation. So that's the very first thing that you have to welcome in.
Right.
So whatever your reaction to Trump is, strong, weak, whatever. So if we're looking at that kind of, well, how do we transform, how do we enable? Well, the first circle, if you like, that Suaveil would bring you to is your particular reaction to that particular set of circumstances. So whatever your reaction to Trump, you start with that.
Yeah, but you're not, but the sense you feel isn't a splitting off. It's just something that can become split off.
Well, it can become split off. No, I'm not saying it does at that point, but it could become split off, right? Because it could be kind of, well, or it can take you over, right? More likely. Yeah. I mean, what happens to me, it's not so much it splits me off, more it dominates me. And I kind of just obsessively start reading stuff about him and kind of, and it might be helpful for me to do that, but more often than not, no, there's something about the capacity that the mind has to create a snowball effect where things spin on their own axis and pull us then off our axis. Now that's part of the stuff you find within the bone teachings. When we have the letter Tzadi that's repeated in those four words, it's that magnetic principle that is like the strange attractor, that if that can either align us or can pull us off in a different direction. You know, if you want simplicity, one of the profound says, you know, the teaching, the bone teachings. So if you really want to look at the heart of Kabbalah, go and meditate on that phrase. Just that phrase. Anybody willing to do that? Okay, really sensible.
Why? I think you should ask us when we're fresh, not at the end of the day.
No, this is perfectly the right time. Perfectly the right time to ask that question, because the reason why we just don't do one thing, right, we will definitely return to the bone teachings, but if we just say, oh, well, I just want simplicity. Of course, when you're feeling confused, you want simplicity. If you just have simplicity, very quickly you get bored, you feel a bit defeated by it, and you give up. If you feel too much complexity, you get overwhelmed, you feel like you want to give up. The important thing is not to give up. The poles of simplicity and complexity are just two poles. The answer isn't in the extreme. The answer is somewhere else. Holly, do you say something?
Sorry. I just interrupt you.
It's all right.
I was thinking about how there is a sense of being able to step away from the overwhelm of thinking. You know, oh, there's just too many thoughts and too many things I don't understand, and I don't know how the world works. I can sort of, it's easier to step away from that than it is to overwhelm of feeling. So when a lot of feeling comes, and sometimes it's not like an overwhelming feeling of hating Trump, it's just an overwhelming feeling of there's such a lot going on in the world.
Yeah, sure.
So in some ways, the simplicity, it's not, for me, I don't really know what that means, to kind of just want something simple. It's more a sense of like, how do I find a balance, and how do I contain it? And especially when it's a feeling thing, because the thoughts thing, that's just thoughts, you know. Oh, it's too much thoughts, it's too much information. It's easy to step away from that, but feelings sort of take over.
Mm.
They become physical somehow. It's making sense.
Well, it does, yeah. I mean, I think thoughts can also become physical as well, and thoughts and feelings tend to trigger each other, actually. So it is more like that spinning wheel coming too fast. You're right, that the art really is to find balance, is to find a way where if things are too fast, we have to find a way to slow things down. Things are too slow, we need energy to speed things up a little. And it really is an art of continuing to find the balance point and trusting our own particular expression of that. But also it's important to recognize that becoming overwhelmed in whatever way we do is natural and normal. But the important thing is to remember to lean back into these bigger places, these bigger energies, these bigger figures that are not shaken by the shaking of the world. That's why the remembering of the angels, the practices like chanting the name, practices like identifying with Adam Kadmon, or visiting the House of Life, or even the simplicity but power of the Kabbalistic cross, are designed really to, in a certain way, interrupt the spinning wheel in whatever it's doing, and to bring in that kind of different quality into that. And that's, you know, this genuinely, the, you know, in a certain sense, what we're looking at, you see, is in this alchemical work, we're stirring stuff up. We're taking away, and in a certain sense, what that does is to disturb the stability of Yesod, which, although it may be a painful stability, is something we've learned to live with. So as the deeper energies dig into that, they wake up stuff. And then stuff comes at us from inside. There's also stuff coming at us from outside. And oh my God, comes very, very quickly that way. But it's somehow to try and remember that, okay, fine, this is natural, but for right now, this is a bit much. I need to do something else. I need to close my books, go for a walk. I need to have a drink. I need to do whatever it is that takes me away from the overwhelming things, so that I can recoup myself a little. Ultimately, it's about returning into relationship with our own essence that has become occluded through the experiences of life.
That's a real thing. That remembering to do something else. Oh my God, that's that's quite a thing.
I think it's important to remember how hard that is, right? I think that's one of the most fundamental things to try and remember, is that it's hard to remember. It's incredibly hard once we are reminded, we feel reminded, we know, but in the dynamics of day-to-day life, it's the easiest of all things to forget and to run on like the pre-existing grooves of our psyche, and coming out of that involves a jolt. It likes being jolted out of the automatic guide rails. So you've been using this phrase, you know, for the last couple of days, Phil, and it's a good phrase, that sort of being jolted out or blinked out or moved out slightly. And in a way, that's right at the heart of the kind of the meditative methods, the swift methods that Colette uses. And when you can do those methods for yourself, more it's easier when somebody else does it, of course, because you get taken by surprise. But certainly you can use that method for yourself. You can't really use that meditation for yourself if you're knackered. Right? It takes a certain energy. So you're much better off using something like a chant, or identifying with a name and getting letting the angels hold you. So if you're feeling really tired and overwhelmed, prayerful methods that invite the angels to hold you, using something like one of the chants that we've worked with, that just bring energy to you and hold you in a different way, is much more effective than. Methods that involve that kind of sharpness require a certain amount of available energy. So if you're feeling very disturbed but you've got energy, well then you can use that sharp energy in a kind of a meditation that just focuses you. But if your energy is low, then you need a different approach.
Is this why we do like a daily practice, to kind of always try and come back to something?
Yeah. Well, the importance of daily practice is to create new routines, new grooves, right? More grooves that align us towards this deeper sense of ourselves, so that deconstruct the known sense of self. So you know, it's the, and in a way, when some of these habits are really well established, that they really work in our favor then. So sometimes it's more difficult not to meditate than it is to meditate, because we have created the habit of that, and that can be then supportive. But it's
say that sentence again.
Right. When we have meditated long enough, we've created the habit of meditation, which then becomes supportive to the process of transformation, because it can become more difficult not to meditate than to meditate. Right? Because you have the automatic part of your being has built into itself, part of who I am is I meditate. And if I don't meditate, maybe I feel a bit unsettled.
It's become a groove.
Yeah.
So it can then be a problem because you're relying on it.
No, then it's helpful, right? Then well, it's helpful groove, in that case, because it then supports your process of deconstruction.
Mm. Right, so you're aligning more to yourself, and yeah. Then the whole point of we're looking at these things that occlude our real self.
Yeah.
Start to...
Well, they start to break down. I said, but what happens as they start to break down is like most things that break down, there's a sense of chaos, a feeling of internal chaos as things start to break down. I mean, there's a very, there's various things that happen. I mean, the place that when John of the Cross talks about the dark night of the soul, where he told where that is, well, in fact, he talks about two dark nights. One, the first dark night he talks about is really, really the the veil between Tiferet and the lower part of the tree. But there is the deeper of dark night, which he calls the dark night of the spirit, which is the veil between the dual and the non-dual. And that involves a stripping out of all grooves and a breaking down of all forms. And there no method helps you other than the method of surrendering in love into the mysterious. And trusting, really, or trying to trust. I mean, you can't really even trust in that place, but you hold the intention to trust. What happens out of that is an increasing reorientation.
Can I just check something in?
Oh.
When, say, for example, you are with anger, is the idea that you would almost like take that into the tree and just see how it moves, or would you take it to what you think it needs? So, because you could take it to Gajula or Gabura, or you could just take it in and allow whatever arises to come.
Well, in practice, I would just align myself with the tree and then bring the anger into the hold of the tree and let it do, and then trust what then happens to it rather than to try and decide from outside. Okay, right. So I think, otherwise you end up in a complicated trying to guess where it should go. So you take the rage, the fear, whatever it is, you lean back into the tree, or you lean back into the angels, if you're using the angels, and then you just allow to happen what needs to happen.
Thank you.
Otherwise, if you do it another way, you're relying on the logical mind and the fact that you know what's right, aren't you?
Yes, you are. That's right. And this, above all, is a work of trust and unknowing, leaning back into these deeper energies and trusting them somewhere.
Go on,
Duncan.
I was just going to chuck the word discombobulation in at that point then.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is a sort of surrender to the process of becoming.
Yes, there is. So that place, so discombobulation then is part of what happens, right? Because it's part of the disarrangement of things. So there's a whole kind of, so as there's an inevitable, as we're leaning back into these deeper energies, and as we're trying to trust and abandon the habitual knowing, there's an inevitable discombobulation. And part of the difficulty of this work is the enduring that, in a way, of having to kind of be with that. And in particular, what can really happen with this convolution, it can be just, oh my God, I don't know what's going on. But very often it can be the swinging between opposites and believing one thing, then the opposite, and then getting quite exhausted with it. And often it's the exhaustion point that's the useful moment, because that's often the moment where that dynamic loses its power, and then something else, either from outside or from inside, steps forward. So those things get reframed in a different way. And of course, the trouble is, you might have that as a theory, you can't know it until it happens to you.
So, like, as we work with this, almost like every weekend, stuff is coming up, I'm presuming, for everybody. And then as we work, it gets process change shifted, things work, change, the angels help, and that's the whole point. Is that right?
That is indeed the whole point, and certainly the hope,
It's not just me then. Is everyone else getting loads of stuff come up and it's all happening? Yeah, thanks for nodding, Tim.
I've been going back over various things, meditation, things from 20, 30 years ago. And do you remember this guy, Wayne Dyer?
Oh, yes, I do.
He sort of New Age. Well, anyway, I clicked on a quote of his, and he said, because, I mean, one of the things is, you know, what am I here? Why am I here? What am I doing? And he said, the only reason that you're here is to express love, is to express love. Therefore, everything that you hate is your best teacher, because this is your incarnational journey. This is your purpose. So get on with it and find out, because you have to express love too. And I wonder, do you find that too simplistic and New Agey and whatever, or do you find that valid? He said some things that I really disagree with, looking back on him over the years. So I wondered what your thoughts were on that very simplistic thought.
Well, I think the problem with it, he makes it sound too simple, but it's the nature of some of those teachings. But substantially, he's right. I think that actually, in the end, it's about the ability. But what we mean by love, you see, is the interesting thing, I think. And that is what I would understand love, not as an emotion, but as a spectrum of awareness. So that begins with. It begins with just noticing that the other exists at one end, and at the further end of the spectrum is about understanding our essential unity with the other. The problem with a lot of spiritual teachings about love is they speak of it as an activity or something we should do. I should love you, I should forgive you, I should do this, I should do that. Whereas actually it's an aspect of awareness. So as my awareness responds to you, so my very first turning towards that which is uncomfortable is allowing you to be there.
I'm going to be careful here, because we're a very particular group of people, aren't we, who are interested in this inquiry. Whereas most people are just getting on with their lives and trying to earn a living and support kids, and you know, we can't really expect if we there's also a greater level of, I don't know, everydayness that's happening as well, and it doesn't feel, it can be great if we were all more informed in this way, but it's a big ask.
I don't know what you mean. You're postulating a them and usness. I mean, within this.
I'm trying to say that we shouldn't be them and us, but we're also different and different perspectives. Or I don't know. I'm not trying to be.
I'm not. I'm one of those people.
Yeah, perhaps I am, but most people aren't asking questions, are they? If you like,
it might be. Yeah. I think that's a really, really dangerous assumption.
Yeah.
It's like Harry Potter people who call, like the pagan community, who call people muggles, you know. It's just really, really...
No, I'm not holding it like that. I'm not holding it in that way, but yeah.
I think love is something that people learn as an emotion, hopefully when they're loved as children, though often not, but certainly through romantic... They understand it through romantic love. But... it doesn't matter where you pick up on this. We all recognise it. As maybe that's the connection between us all, you know. Trump loves things. I don't care what he loves. He might love money. He might love, what's her name, Melania. It doesn't matter to me. But he, in some way, there's a baseline where we all, humanity, understands love. So it seems like a good way to start. And I mean, even within this group, we're all doing it to the level of which we're capable at this moment. And who knows how big a spectrum that is? I haven't a clue. I just know you're all really nice people who ask clever questions, you know. But I think what Ian said about love being this one end of the spectrum of the love of awareness is noting and allowing other to be, and at the other end, understanding our essential unity with other. I've just drawn a big line with two arrows on because I thought that was really helpful.
Well, love is the currency of Civerville. So love is, in a sense, we could say, a form of metaphysical gravity that shapes the space-time. So it is the activity of the web. And as such, has many grades and gradations, I think.
I wanted to make a simple point. Maybe it's too simple. To Rob, you're saying something interesting. I just wondered if the contact in the supermarket with somebody through your heart is about that contact that is what we're trying to do, I thought, in a way.
Of course, it's very
small, you know, it's just, it can be huge and ginormous, but it can be, I just want tiny, tiny moments of a smile at somebody can touch them, and that changes that. I think that's that part of that wonderful energy. Maybe I'm completely wrong.
No. I think you're right. I think that's part of it. But we're in danger of dismissing Rob's point, which is also a valid point, right? Because there is something about within human nature, collective human nature, there is a will to awaken. There is also the will to close down and to not awaken, which is part of the point that Rob is making. It's part of what Prune was speaking earlier. So there is both. It's not about calling people muggles or we're better than them. It's really about recognizing another aspect of the duality of life. We need to finish, but I'm gonna it'll be do something upsetting right at the end, and say to you all that actually, if you really want to understand the simplicity underneath everything that we are looking at, then I really do invite you to study the bone point to itself. Everything that I talk about is in that phrase. But to do that, you will need to look at the phrase, you'll need to understand some of the words, you'll need to look at the Hebrew letters, you'll need to understand it at lots of different levels. And you don't have to do it, but if you want to say, okay, let's get right into the heart of it, well, okay, it's there.
Oh, you're not leaving us on that, are you?
I am. I'm going to listen. So now I'm going to thank the archangels. So I'm just going to mute you all, leaving you just at that point. So just come into breath, come into body. Whatever has happened has happened. Wherever you are is wherever you are. So however you are, let it be that way. This is part of the three terrible oaths of Dzogchen. However you are, let it be that way. The Dzogchen's a Tibetan system. Whatever way it goes, let it go that way. There is no purpose. There is purpose. Feel around us the presence of the archangels. Feel the web of Zerubbabel. The sense of Raphael embodying life, Michael embodying light, Gabriel embodying love, Uriel embodying law. Remember, you are Adam Kadmon, the bearer of the name. Remember the chant Ani Yud He Vav He. Remember the touch of the dew of heaven. So Vuviel, we thank you. Go in peace. Auriel, we thank you. Go in peace. Gabrielle, we thank you. Go in peace. Mikael, we thank you. Go in peace. Raphael, we thank you. Go in peace. May we all go in peace. Thank you all very much.
Thank you, God.